And this is what George Washington said. And you can visit the synagogue and they have this letter enshrined, and you could take home, you know, gifts which are copies of the letter. But when it's not until you visit the synagogue, read this letter, that you discover why God has placed His hand of blessing on the United States of America. This letter has been quoted in 3 Supreme Court opinions. It's considered a classic treatment of religious freedom and religious liberty. And this is what George Washington said. He said, after worshiping at this synagogue as a visitor, he said, "I rejoice in the opportunity of assuring you that I shall always retain a grateful remembrance of the cordial welcome I experienced in my visit to Newport." Newport is in Rhode Island. "The government of the United States, which gives to bigotry no sanction, to persecution no assistance." Now, most people stop reading the letter at that point. But if you keep reading, it says this: "May the children of the stock of Abraham," the Jewish people, "who dwell in this land, continue to merit and enjoy the goodwill of the other inhabitants, while everyone," and here he begins to cite the scripture, "while everyone shall sit in safety under his own vine and fig tree, and there shall be none to make him afraid." And when I visited that synagogue, I read that part of the letter and I said, that's it. That's the secret of God's blessing, not only in the United States of America, but any nation. And here is George Washington, acting as federal head of the United States of America, giving to the Jewish people a gift which, quite frankly, they haven't enjoyed in the history of mankind. Almost everywhere the Jewish people have gone, they've been under persecution. And George Washington, the federal head of the United States at that point, says, it's not going to be that way in the United States. You're going to be able to live here. You're going to be able to dwell here. You're going to be able to practice your religion as you see fit. And no one will come against you. No one will persecute you. And the way I understand history is God at that point reached out and put His hand on the United States and blessed it from sea to shining sea because of Genesis 12 and verse 3. People say, well, do you really think it's that simple? And yes, I do. Because of the pattern of God and how He enforces what He has said back in Genesis 12. And so the United States of America typically has had a very friendly relationship with the nation of Israel. Under our prior president, that changed quite a bit, didn't it? We went from a smile to a scowl when Netanyahu visited, and we'll see what's going to happen under our current president. I have a feeling things will get somewhat better. But this is true. This is how God works. He works in history to enforce what He has articulated early on in the Bible. See, and all of these things are helpful to us as Christians living in the year 2017 to formulate a correct attitude towards the nation of Israel. So what have we seen thus far in this presentation? Number one, the purpose for Israel. Why does Israel exist? She was started independent of the mother-child idolatrous system to be a channel or a vehicle of blessing to the world, to mediate Genesis 3 verse 15 to the world. Number two, we've seen the divine protection of Israel. God gave to Israel specific promises, knowing that Satan would work in history to try to blot out the nation of Israel. He specifically said, whoever blesses you, I will bless. Whoever curses you, I will curse. And this takes us now to number three in the outline. What then should be the proper perspective on the nation of Israel? The first two bullet points hopefully will enlighten us concerning how we as Christians in the year 2017 should think about the nation of Israel. And very quickly, I want to talk you through four subcategories. Number one, attitude. Number two, the angelic conflict. Number three, Israel's apostate condition. And number four, some practical reasons to support the nation of Israel. Let's talk very quickly about attitude Turn, if you could, to Romans chapter 11 and verse 17. Paul, in the book of Romans, talks about a tree. I think the tree is the Abrahamic covenant. And he talks about natural branches that have been broken off the tree. Those would be the Jewish people. And he talks about wild, unnatural branches being grafted into the tree. Who do you think those wild, unnatural branches are? That would be us, Gentile Christians. And in the process of developing this metaphor, Paul begins to comment on the attitude of the unnatural branches towards the natural branches. In other words, what should be the attitude of the Gentile Christians towards the Jews that have been broken off in unbelief? Paul specifically says to us, wild branches grafted in, he says, verse 18, do not be what? Arrogant towards the branches. It's interesting, he doesn't rebuke our lack of Bible knowledge. He doesn't rebuke our Bible study methods. He rebukes an attitude of the heart. What is your heart attitude towards the Jewish people? And we, as Gentile Christians grafted in, looking at unbelieving Jews, Paul specifically says, do not become arrogant towards them. Now, what is church history? Church history exemplifies the church's violation of what Paul just said in verse 18. Have you heard this sermon lately? First, their synagogue should be set on fire. Second, their home should likewise be broken down and destroyed. Thirdly, they should be deprived of their prayer books and Talmuds. Fourthly, their rabbis must be forbidden under the threat of death to teach anymore. Fifthly, passport and traveling privileges should be absolutely forbidden to the Jews. Sixthly, they ought to be stopped from charging usury, which is interest on loans. Seventhly, let the young and strong Jews and Jewesses be given the flail, the axe, the hoe, the spade, the distaff, and spindle, and let them earn their bread by the sweat of their noses. We ought to drive their rascally lazy bones out of the system. Therefore, away with them. To sum up, dear princes and nobles who have Jews in your domains, if this advice of mine does not suit you, then find a better one so that you and we may be free of this insufferable devilish burden, the Jews. Most people look at that and say, you must be quoting the leader of Iran, Adolf Hitler. I'm quoting here one of our guys, Martin Luther, a man who did a lot of good, but he had a dark side. In fact, we're getting ready, aren't we, to celebrate Luther's 500th year of nailing the 95 Theses to the cathedral door in Wittenberg, Germany. God used Luther, but so did the devil. And people like to kind of let Luther off the hook here and say, well, he was just old. He was grumpy. He misspoke. Everything I've quoted here is from an actual tract that Luther wrote, and the title of it is Concerning the Jews and Their Lies. Now, as a public speaker and a writer, I can tell you that sometimes when you speak publicly, you misstate things. It's a world of difference when you're writing. Because when you're writing, you're calmly and coolly deliberating and reflecting on your words. This tract goes on for 80 pages. You see all the ellipses there that I have? Dot, dot, dot. What does that mean? Everything I left out. I'm not letting Luther off the hook here at all. He goes on and on and on, and you can get this track on the internet, download it to your Kindle, read it yourself. 80 pages in deliberate thought of anti-Semitism against the Jewish people. John Calvin, another one of the church reformers who also did some good, went down this same road. This is what Calvin said in his commentary on the book of Daniel as he is disagreeing with a rabbi. And it's in print. And Calvin says this, but here the rabbi not only betrays his ignorance, but his utter stupidity. Since God so blinded the whole people that they were like restive dogs, I have had much conversation with many Jews. I have never seen either a drop of piety or a grain of truth or ingenuineness. Nay, I have never found common sense in any Jew. But this fellow who seems so sharp and ingenious displays his own imprudence to his great disgrace. See, you read comments like this. Are these men following Paul's admonition in Romans 11, verse 18, do not be arrogant towards the natural branches?